What a number of you had mentioned last week was that because you were privy to hear this shaila unfolding and you were able to hear and understand and appreciate the different parts that go into this issue of mamzerus, so you wanted to go through some of the possible options of how a posek, how a gadol is able to put together a psak to consider being makel on something that seems so black and white, something that seems so obvious. So I'm not going to go through the specifics of this case only because it's very fresh and it's very raw and I don't want any of the details to be disclosed or anyone to even think that maybe they know who it is. I don't think anybody here knows who it is, but still, just to try to frame the conversation and explain, this is not the only time this has come up. Unfortunately, we've dealt with this multiple times in the past, and the poskim have been dealing with this for hundreds and thousands of years. And now, we just have the opportunity to unpack a little bit, to understand and explore what are the potential leniencies, what are the potential ways that we can construct some kind of halachic configuration that would allow this person to go ahead and get married and not consider themselves to be a mamzer. So let's go through it. I think it's very, very fascinating. Under every chuppah, there's a very significant statement that the chassan says to the kala. And that really is the whole wedding. The chassan gives the kala a ring, and he says, with this ring, harei at mekudesh asli. And that's the whole wedding. That's everything. All else is commentary. The whole wedding happens, and the chassan gives the kala the ring, and he says, harei at mekudesh asli. But then he finishes off the sentence, and he says, kedas Moshe v'Yisrael. What does it mean you are married to me based on the understandings of Moshe Rabbeinu and the Jewish people? What does that even mean? Moshe Rabbeinu is the marriage counselor. Moshe Rabbeinu is the one who's informing the way I'm getting married. What exactly is the understanding in that statement? What it means is that we're getting married with the approval, with the endorsement, with the recommendation of Moshe Rabbeinu, which means the assumption is that we're only getting married based on the pretense that everything we're going to do is based on what Moshe Rabbeinu would expect us to do and what all the Chacham would expect us to do. And therefore, let's say it turns out to be a situation where we are doing something that Moshe Rabbeinu would not approve of, then it means that retroactively we never got married in the first place. That's the implication of the statement that the Chassan makes. It's a very, very significant statement that he's making. He's basically saying we're getting married now on condition. The condition is that everything that's going to happen is in line with what Moshe Rabbeinu wants. That's amazing. That's an amazing statement. So what would be a situation where we would find that Moshe Rabbeinu wouldn't be happy, and therefore the marriage would be retroactively annulled? What would be an example of that? How would we invalidate? The most fundamental way, and the reason why I'm asking that is because the most fundamental way to try to get past the mamzeris issue that we're confronted with is to figure out how we could undermine and disqualify, how we could invalidate the original Kiddushin. That's the best way to get rid of a situation of mamzerus. A mamzer is a product of a woman who got married and had an extramarital affair, whether it's her fault or not her fault, she thought her husband was dead, it doesn't make a difference. The result, that child that is born is a mamzer. The greatest and easiest way to get rid of that problem is to invalidate her original marriage and say, this really wasn't a marriage in the first place, and therefore she didn't have an extramarital affair. That's the easiest way around it. So how can we do that? So let's look at this case, for example. I say under the chuppah, kedas Moshe v'Yisrael. What do I have to do in a marriage to make it no longer kedas Moshe v'Yisrael, and then it will retroactively invalidate our marriage from the outset? So the Gemara says a few examples. Number one, if you have a situation of a man who is mekadesh isha bal karcha, what does that mean? Bal karcha means against somebody's wishes. So how can I marry a girl against her wishes? What does that mean? When I'm getting married, it takes two parties to consent to want to get married. If let's say I walk into a store, now don't misunderstand me, I'm not saying that a marriage is the same exchange as a store when I'm buying something, when I'm purchasing an item, but it just gives us a simpler appreciation of a much more complex issue. When I go into a store and I want to buy an item, and I go behind the counter and I say, you know, I'd like to buy the cash register. Well, that's not for sale. What do you mean? But it's in the store. Yeah, but that's not one of the items that we sell. I go up to the owner of the store. I say, I'd like to buy your shirt. Well, we're not selling my shirt. Yeah, but I want to buy it. It doesn't make a difference. You can say you want to buy it all you want. I'm not selling it. If I'm not consenting to the sale, doesn't matter how much money you give me, it's not going to be yours. And even if you throw money at me and rip my shirt off of me, it's still not going to be yours. You're stealing. So what happens by a marriage? What does it mean that you get married bal karcha shel ha'isha? What does it mean that he's able to be mekadesh his wife against her wishes? What do you mean? If she didn't want to get married, then she wouldn't have accepted. If she didn't accept, it means they're not married. You don't have a union here. You don't have two people who committed to this. So what does it mean? So what it means is, the Gemara says, that you have a husband who knows very well, a guy who knows very well that the girl really doesn't want to marry him, but he keeps on pressuring her. And he pressures her to the point where she finally says, okay, fine, I'm going to marry you. But she was pressured into it, not because she's interested, but because she has no choice but to say yes. So if he's Mekadesh Isha Bal Karcha, is that Kedas Moshe of Yisrael? Would Moshe Rabbeinu be proud of a marriage that came about in that way? No. Says the Gemara, that's a terrible thing. Because what does it mean? It means if you have a very persuasive guy, he can walk over to any girl on the street and start talking to her and start driving her crazy and tell her, I'm not going to let you leave this corner until you say yes to marry me. And he's going to intimidate her. And what's going to happen? What's going to happen? Then the girl is stuck being married to this guy? That doesn't make sense. So the Gemara says that the Chacham came along and said, such a marriage is not Kedas Moshe of Yisrael. That's not something that's acceptable. And therefore, if anybody is Mekadesh Isha Bal Karcha, if anyone goes ahead and forces a woman into a marriage together with him, we would say that Midrabanan, that marriage is invalidated retroactively. Even if they end up living together for 10 years, we say from day one, there was something wrong with what they did, and it was improper, it was inappropriate, and it was not Kedas Moshe of Yisrael. And the Chachamim say that we lift the whole institution of marriage and we say it's like it never existed to this couple, and it's as if they were never married. That's one example. Another example the Gemara gives is the following. The Gemara Maseches Yevamos Daf Kuf tells us a very strange scenario. They used to get married at a much younger age than we get married today. So the Gemara says, what happens if a man marries a katana? A guy goes and gets married to a girl who's less than 12 years old. Now, that's a strange kind of marriage. Says the Gemara, but if he's a responsible boy, and the family all thinks that this is a great idea for her, and she's up to being married to him, which I don't really understand, but okay, let's say, right? So they go and they get married. But the Torah doesn't recognize such a marriage. That she's a young girl. She can't really accept it. So what happens? They live together and they're officially considered to be married midrabanan. All right, they did the ceremony, did the whole thing. Now she becomes a gedola. Now she's 12 years old. So now you have to do a real marriage. Now you have to get married again. So we prepare a whole wedding and we're getting ready for this bas mitzvah wedding, whatever it is, very exciting, wonderful, right? It's quite a bas mitzvah celebration. And they're getting ready to have this whole wedding. And as she's walking down the aisle, about to get married to the husband that she's been married to for the last 5 years, correct? Right? So she's getting remarried to her own husband. Just now it's a marriage midaraisa, because now she's a gedola. Sounds like a strange case, but okay. As she's about to do that, a guy runs into the room and says to her, you can do much better. You were silly when you married this guy. You were in third grade. Now you're a big girl. You're a sixth grader. Come on, use your seichel a little bit. You should marry me. You're going to marry this guy? Don't fool yourself. You never went out there in the world. You never saw your options. You didn't date at all. Let yourself meet other people. I'm the right guy. And as they're at the wedding, he goes and convinces this girl that it's better to marry him than to marry the first guy. Now, is that Kedas Moshe of Yisrael? Says the Gemara, no, that's awful. We know that they've had a very happy marriage, and they've been married for the last 5 years, and now the only thing they're doing is a technicality to finish off the marriage. One guy swoops in the middle and decides to steal the girl away from you? That's crazy. Says the Gemara, that's not Kedas Moshe of Yisrael, and therefore we would say, whatever he does, even if she accepts the ring and he says, Hareya Mekudeshes, it's Eina Mekudeshes. We say that that is an invalid form of marriage, and therefore we would say that we have a right to disqualify the whole thing. Okay, so here it becomes absolutely fascinating to figure out what are the halachic loopholes that can try to help us in this kind of situation. So let's see, what are the origins, how they came to be, and whether they are practical to be used in problematic cases that we face. We go to a story in the Maharsham. The Maharsham is one of the great gedolim, Rav Shalom Mordechai HaKohen Shvadron. You ever heard of Rav Shalom Shvadron? Rav Shalom Shvadron was the Maggid of Yerushalayim. How did he become famous? He was famous in Israel. He became famous in America because of Pesach Kron. Pesach Kron wrote all the Maggid books. That's all Rav Shalom Shvadron. He was very close with him. So the Maharsham was the grandfather of Rav Shalom Shvadron. He had the same name, Rav Shalom Mordechai HaKohen Shvadron. And he had the following scenario that came up. Here, listen how sad. There was a woman whose husband was missing for 12 years. She had a very happy marriage. Everything was fine. Her husband went on a business trip. He was gone. 12 years she's sitting and waiting. An aguna, a real case of an aguna. Okay? Finally, after 12 years, two witnesses come in and say, you've been waiting to get married all this time? We were the business partners of your husband. We went on the trip with him, and we saw that he died, and he was buried, and we're so sorry that we never let you know, but that's the reality. That's what happened. Now, again, you can ask yourself, how does such a thing take place? The answer is, this is in the 1800s, when we didn't have the communication that we have today. So, the man died, b'medina sayam, he died when they went on the trip to Germany or whatever it was. So, okay, so she didn't find out. 12 years later, she finds out that all these 12 years that she's been waiting around, her husband already died 12 years ago. Fine. Now, they died without children. I'm sorry, he died without children. So what's the halacha? A woman whose husband dies without children has to do chalitza. Fine. So they call the brother-in-law, they do a chalitza, the beis din signs off on it and tells her, you're allowed to get remarried. We're so sorry that you had to wait 12 years. We weren't aware that your husband died. Now the eidim came in, they testified, so you're allowed to get remarried. Okay. Now she's married to a second guy. She's pregnant and has a child. And now, all of a sudden, the husband shows up out of nowhere. So now what? This is what happened in the days of the Maharshal. The husband shows up one day after 12 years and he says, my friends told you that I was dead and buried? I was here. It took me 12 years to get home. You know, I got stuck over there. I got sick for a couple of years, whatever it was. But here, I love you. I'm back. And she says, what do you mean you're back? You've been gone for 12 years. I got a chalitza from the Beis Din. I went and got remarried on the auspices of the Beis Din. They told me to get remarried. And now you show up. What do I do now? And now she has a child. Look at what the Maharsham writes. It's amazing. It just makes you feel the seriousness and severity of these kinds of situations. Look here, number base. Le'inyan havlad. When we're talking about this child, who now is ostensibly a mamzer. Le'inyan havlad yesh chashash gadol, says the Maharsham. I'm very concerned about this kid. Sheba'im yi adino kemamzer. If we are going to taint this person and say, you are now deemed a mamzer, yimseru lebeis yalde gayim legadlo v'yamiru daso, the parents aren't going to want to raise this kid. They're going to say, nothing's ever going to become of him. So let's just give him away to an adoption center. He's going to be raised as a non-Jew. And it is what it is. O ha'isha tovet es atzma ladasim ha'yelet. The woman is going to take her own life with the child. Life is not worth living. I brought a mamzer into the world. This is what I had to live for. So she's going to die by suicide. That's what he writes. Ki hayeled ben yachid hu la ulabayla hasheni. This is the only child that was born to this second marriage. She never had children from the first. Imagine a woman waits 12 years, finally has a child, and now the husband shows up, only to find out that now the child that she had is a mamzer. So this is the question that the Maharsham was faced with. And this was the problem. So what do you do? Says the Maharsham, v'lo echached, I'm not going to hide the fact, if you would have asked me the question, so naturally, what would you think to do? What's the natural thing to do? Now that the first husband is back, we'll tell him, write a get for your wife. She's already remarried. Too bad. Terrible story, but now she's married. That's what they did. But what does that help? Doesn't help. So he said, if you would have asked me, I would have said, I would have been able to come up with an idea of how we could get around this problem. But now that he gave a get, it's too late. So what's his idea? What's the idea that the Maharsham had? And this goes down in halacha as the get Maharsham. Maharsham had an idea that would get around this whole issue. How would he get around the issue? What's the idea? So let's see. Says the Maharsham as follows. We have a concept in halacha that's referred to as shlichus. Shlichus means, I don't always have to do everything myself. I can sometimes appoint another person to stay, to be the proxy in my stead. So for example, the Gemara says, if I have to be mafris truma, I have a lot of produce that came in, I have to separate truma, I'm not available to separate the truma. So I'm allowed to ask somebody else, who's a responsible person, to serve as my shaliach, to go separate the truma on my behalf. It's one example of many. You can have shlichos by many other areas of halacha. Say for example, when you go to offer the Karban Pesach, so every Jewish person has to offer a Karban Pesach. Does that mean each person goes on their own? No. We have 20 people all sharing a Karban Pesach, and one person from the group goes to the Beis HaMikdash on all of our behalf, offers the Karban Pesach, and then comes back. and we all share the eating of the Korban Pesach together. Okay, so we have this concept of shlichus. We're very familiar with it. Now, says the Gemara, there's a concept of shlichus when it comes to divorcing one's wife. Now, you're going to say that's a very strange thing to do. But it's not so strange. Why is it not so strange? Sometimes a couple is so upset with each other, and there was such a difficult marriage, that when it's time to get divorced, they don't want to look at each other. I don't want to be in the same room as you. So you know what I'm going to do? Of course, I'm not going to give a hard time. I'm not going to be agging my wife. Of course I'm going to give the get. But I don't want you to be there. And I don't want to be there. So I'm going to send a shaliach, and I'm going to say, you know, please write the get on my behalf, and please deliver it to the woman at another time. I'm not interested in seeing her ever again. I don't want to interact with her. I don't want to speak to her. So you send the get that way. It's not so respectful. It's not so nice. You probably lack a sense of closure. But okay, there is such a concept. There is such an idea. Now, what happens if, let's say, I send the shaliach in general, take ourselves out of marriage for a moment. What happens if I send the shaliach to be mafresh chuma on my behalf? I ask somebody to go and separate chuma for me, and then it's going to be 5 hours until they get to the warehouse that has all the chuma there, that has all the produce. And in the interim, in the 5 hour, in that span, I say to myself, you know what? I don't want them to be mafresh chuma for me. I'm going to be in the warehouse tomorrow. I'll do it myself. I don't want them to do it. I'm able to be mevatel the shliach. I'm able to invalidate the shaliach. What does that mean? I appointed you as my shaliach, and now I take it back. I don't want you to be my shaliach anymore. If you no longer have my authority to be doing something on my behalf that belongs to me, you can't serve as my shliach, period. So there's such a thing as bitul ha-shlichus, which means we undo the shlichus that we originally sent you on a mission to do. And the same thing goes by a get. Let's say a husband writes out a get for his wife and says to a shliach, my wife lives in California, I'm currently in New York, please deliver the get to her and tell her, I'm sorry, I don't want to look at you again, but I'm sending you a shliach because I don't want you to be stuck, here's the get. Now, it takes a few hours to get from New York to California. So he books the next flight, goes on the plane to go meet the woman on the other side, but in the interim, the husband says, hey, you know what? People about to the shliach. I really don't want to divorce. I really, you know, we got in a lot of arguments, but really, in my heart of hearts, I really appreciate her, and I want to stay married to her. So what happens now? Play out the scenario. It's before the days of cell phones, so what happens? Meanwhile, I'm not sure, how could it be before cell phones, but post-plane? Okay, it's a good question. But the shliach is on his way to California to deliver the get, right? In the interim, he doesn't know that I had a change of heart. So he thinks he's a man on a mission. He's supposed to keep doing his shlichus and give the get to the wife. What's going to happen? He's going to land in California. The wife is going to be anxiously waiting in the airport to get this piece of paper. She's going to take it from him. And she thinks she's divorced. Now what happens? The truth really was, she's not divorced. Because, why? Because he invalidated the shlichus. He is mevatel the shliach on the way. He had a change of heart. So now what happens is, as far as she's concerned, she thinks, I'm free. I'm allowed to go and get married to someone else. As far as the husband's concerned, she's not divorced. She's still married to me. Why? Because even though I wrote a get and I sent the shliach to deliver it to her, I changed my mind. Now, can you imagine what that's going to do to the world? Can you imagine what can happen? You're going to have people, women who think that they're allowed to get married, but now in the ultimate truth, it's really that they're still married. Because the husband was mevatel the shliach. And look what's going to happen. We're going to have mamzerim all over the world. These women are going to go and get remarried because they think they're allowed to. And meanwhile, the husband is sitting and laughing that he's creating this whole circus. So this is a problem. So how do we deal with that problem? That's what the Gemara discusses. How do we deal with that problem when a husband does a terrible thing and is mevatel the shliach shelo b'fnei ha'isha? He's mevatel the shliach just because he decides and he doesn't tell anybody. So what do you do now? So the Gemara says, Rav Gamliel Hazaken, the great Rav Gamliel came along and he said, this is a terrible precedent. We can't have this because this is going to cause all kinds of mamzeris issues. Says the Gemara, he said that no one is allowed to ever be mevatel the shliach shelo b'fnei ha'isha mipnei tikkun ha'olam. It's going to destroy the world if you're going to start doing this. And therefore, anyone who decides that he thinks he has a right to be mevatel the shliach if he's in New York and the shliach is on his way to California, we don't care that he changes his mind. It's too bad. That's what the Gemara says. Too bad. You can't change your mind. Now, the Gemara then discusses, what does it mean you can't change your mind? What does it mean you can't change your mind? What are the two options? What? Can't change your mind, and now what happens? So now the shliach gets to California, gives the get over to the woman. What happens now? Is she yes divorced or not divorced?
Yes, he can't change.
So again, so let's play it out. You're correct. If he can't change his mind, means he go ahead with the original plan, and she is considered to be divorced, right? And therefore, she's allowed to get remarried. That's what I would have said. The problem is, what's the mechanism? How does that work? How can that work? How can it be that the Torah said that I'm able to put a shliach in my place, and that shliach is able to do work for me, and then I'm able to invalidate the shlichus at any point, and along comes Rabbi Gamliel and he says, you know, this is going to cause a major problem in the world, and therefore, you know, we don't care what you say. What do you mean you don't care what I say? That's the way shlichus works. How can you not care what I say? How can you give a get to my wife when you're not authorized to do so? How can I be locked into that? The Gemara says, great question. Great question. You know what the answer is? You're such a jerk for doing that. You're such an idiot for doing such a thing. You're going to destroy the world. Therefore, you know what we do? By someone who creates a situation like that, we say, Afkinu l'mafreya. We say, when you got married, you said, Kedas Moshe v'Yisrael. You said you were going to live an upstanding lifestyle, you were going to be a good person, not be an idiot to your wife, and because you're doing something that's so problematic, we're now going to uproot your marriage l'mafreya. We're now going to go back 20 years in time. You were married for 20 years, but because in the exit strategy you did it wrong, we're now going to invalidate your Kiddushin l'mafreya. And we're going to say it's as if you were never married and the woman doesn't need a get. How do you like that? That's what the Gemara says. Along comes the Marsham. And he says, I have a great answer here. We have this terrible case. A woman who for 12 years is waiting for her husband. Husband doesn't show up. Someone comes in and says, your husband died. We buried him. Go and get remarried. She gets the chalitza, goes ahead and gets remarried, only to find out that the husband is still alive. Now she has a baby. The child is a mamzer. What am I going to do? Says the Marsham, I have a great idea. Call the husband into a room. Tell him to do the following. You know what he should do? What should he do? The first husband. What should he do? Write a get to his wife 12 years later. Send it al yidei shliach. And then invalidate the shliach on his way. Meaning everyone has to be in cahoots here. The husband has to agree to do this. And the wife has to agree not to accept it yet. So let him write a get. It's a halachic loophole. It's brilliant. So he said, why doesn't the husband write a get to his wife, who's now stuck? Let him write a get. Let him send it with a shliach. As the shliach is on his way traveling to her house, let him say, oh, no, I changed my mind. Oh, you're such a pervert that you changed your mind. You're going to ruin the world. You know what? We're going to say that your marriage 12 years ago was invalidated and you were never married in the first place. Great! That's what we want. If I was never married in the first place, it means I'm allowed to be married to this person. If I'm allowed to be married to this person, then the child I have from this person is also not a mamzer. Great! Says the Marsham, here's the answer. This is the way around every mamzerus problem. Now, the problem with this is that, isn't that brilliant? No? It seems like people are not so excited like I am. This is very exciting. So this is what we were talking about last week when you heard it on the phone, get Marsham. One of you asked, what is that? This is what it is, right? You heard that? You said about the get Marsham? That's what the get Marsham is, that he came up with this brilliant halachic loophole where he said, I have a great way around it. Now, what's the problem? The Balei Atos is right that this is going to be a major issue. The Balei Atos is asked, what do you mean? If you're going to come up with this idea, then that means every woman is going to be able to have an extramarital affair, do whatever she wants, and then when she comes to have a problem because a baby is going to be born, she's going to go back to her husband and say, can you do me a favor and please give me a get and send it al yidei shliach and invalidate the get. We're going to be having prutzim all over the place. This is going to cause an impossible situation. So Tosfos says, this doesn't work. You can't do that. You can't do that. The only reason why Rabbi Gamliel came along and said this whole idea that somebody who sends a get al yidei shliach and then is mevatel the shliach, why does that work? It's only mipnei tikkun olam. Again, where did it all start? It started because we don't want that while the husband sends a shliach and he's traveling to California, we don't want that he should be mevatel it along the way and then ruin the woman's life. She's going to go and get remarried, think that she's okay. Meanwhile, she's creating mamzerim. We don't want to do that. Mipnei tikkun olam, we say he cannot be mevatel the shliach once he sends him. But here, you're using it against the system. Here, you're going to use it. Tosa says, what's a good case? Tosa says a case would be where you have an uncle who marries his niece. Bas achoso is his niece. It's a strange thing to do. But the Gemara says there was such a scenario. He loves his niece, not just because she's his wife, but because she's his niece. And it turns out the niece does something wrong. She's a little immature, and she goes and has an affair. And she comes crying to her husband, to her uncle, and she says, you know, uncle, save me over here. And he says, what do you mean I should save you? What happened? And she says, you know, I'm sorry to tell you, I had an affair, and I'm pregnant, and I'm about to give birth to a mamzer, and I'm terrified. I don't know what's going to be. Do me a favor, give me a get. And get me out of this problem. And he's going to say, I love my niece. I don't want to destroy her life. Of course I'm going to do that. As much as he's upset at his wife for doing that, he loves his niece. So Tosa says, you're going to end up having people who use this as a loophole, and therefore, we wouldn't be allowed to accept such a thing. That's what Tosa asks. Now, some Rishonim say, great, so you found a halachic loophole around the Mamzeris issue. Says the Maharsham, even if you have some kind of problem with doing this, even if you feel that this is inappropriate, says the Maharsham, in our case, it's not being used as a loophole for someone who did something wrong. To use it in that case that I just said about the niece and the uncle, that's doing it to do something wrong, to get around the system. Here we're talking about a situation where the woman did nothing wrong. She was led astray by a Beis Din. She was led astray by the Eidim. She was told to go and get remarried. All she's doing is following instructions. Don't we feel bad for her? Wouldn't this be the right thing to do? Therefore, says the Maharsham, in this case, I would have said that this is what we should have done. However, says the Maharsham, the problem is, before you came to ask me the Shaila, you know what you did? What did you do? Anyone remember? What? Gave the get already. So now it's too late. Now it's too late. So this is the story of the Maharsham, and this is why it becomes known as the Get Maharsham. A brilliant idea. He says, anytime you're faced with a Mamzeris issue, get the husband into the room, call him in with his wife, and say, listen, this is what we're going to do. We need everyone to participate, everyone to cooperate. We need you to write a get, send it with a shliach, be mevatel the shliach, and then retroactively your marriage is over, and then we save the whole world from Mamzerim. Sounds like a great idea. However, it was extremely contentious, very controversial psak of the Maharsham that has not been accepted by most of the mainstream poskim at all. Because it's very problematic, it's very difficult. Number one, Rabbi Natam himself writes there in Tosas that if you're going to use the system to get around the halachic problem, that's not something that works. The only time the Gemara said that we say you're not allowed to be mevatel the shliach is mipnei tikkun olam. We don't want the woman in California to be stuck. But in this case, you're using it in the opposite direction. You're using it to make mamzerim become sherim. That's not acceptable. You're allowing women to go and have affairs and never pay a price for it, never feel the consequence. And therefore, Rabbeinu Tam says the whole thing is not acceptable. Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach has a long tshuva to discuss why he objects to it, and that is why basically the Get Maharsham is not something that we generally rely upon to invalidate a marriage, which is why last week in the conversation we brought up about the Get Maharsham, and he said, no, we don't hold to the Get Maharsham, and that's why we're not going to do it. However, you did notice that he said something else. You heard what he said about the Get B'toch Dalet Amos? So what was that about? So that's the second option. Here's the second option. Again, all we're trying to do when we want to be Matar Mamzer is to figure out how we could undo, how we could invalidate the original Kiddushin. How can we get past that issue and then everything's fine? Now, normally in a regular marriage, we don't want to say that your marriage is invalid. We want to say you got married, Kedas Moshe B'Yisrael, and you're happily married and everything's great. But in these kinds of unfortunate situations, we're trying as hard as we can to figure out how we can undo what was originally done. Yeah, you had a question on this? Yeah?
How could Get Maharsham have helped in this situation if she was already given, like, she was given to get the conservative, yeah, or whatever?
Oh, in our case?
Yeah, I mean, why would that even have been a question to bring that?
So, let me get through the second thing, and then I'll explain. Okay, now here, we have a second option. What's the second option? The Torah says that when a husband divorces his wife, it says, v'nasan b'yada. He has to give the get into her hand. What does it mean, into her hand? He has to actually put it in her hands, which is very, very awkward. Rachmana litzlan, we should never know about divorce. We should never know from such things. It's very, very sad every time it happens, but so uncomfortable. They write the get, and then the husband has to walk into his wife's face and give it to her. It's like a very strange thing to do. But okay, that's the way it is. It says v'nasan b'yada. Does it mean it actually has to go into her hands? Says the Gemara, no, if it's within the Dalet Amos of a woman, it's also considered in her hands. Why? Because I don't have to hand it to her. I put it within the Dalet Amos, and the assumption is that within my Dalet Amos around me, it is assumed that anything there is within my possession. Now, does that mean I can walk into your house, stand right next to your silver candlesticks, and since they're within Dalet Amos, they belong to me? Of course not. So what does it mean that Dalet Amos considers it to be my possession. It means if I'm standing in a Rishus HaRabim, I'm standing out in the street, and nobody owns the things that are on the street, and there's a dollar bill that's within dollar amas to me that's on the sidewalk, we can assume that it's mine, and another person doesn't have a right to walk in and take it from right next to me. Because since it's within my own dalat amas, we assume that it belongs to me, even if I didn't yet pick it up. Okay. That's the halacha by a get as well. V'nasa miyada, when the Torah says you have to put it in her hand, it means even within dalat amas is considered to be the same. That's also considered putting it in her hands. Now, says the Gemara, what happens if you have a situation where I'm zore get karavla? I'm standing in the street with my wife, and I throw the get, but it doesn't get to within, I write a get, and I throw it near her. It's closer to her than it is to me, but it's not within her dalat amas. If it's within her dalat amas, then we assume she has ownership of it. But if it's closer to her than to me, what happens then? What happens then? So that is a big discussion. That is a big discussion. And the Gemara seems to say, based on a Mishnah there, that if I'm zorek get, if I throw a get to my wife, and it's closer to her than it is to me, we assume that that would be something that would make her migureshes. She would be considered divorced by doing that. Now the problem is, the Chacham came along and said, this is terrible. Why? Because what can happen? Guy's going to want to divorce his wife, but his wife doesn't want to accept the divorce. So what's he going to do? Go stand in the street next time she's going to the supermarket, throw a get, you know, whatever, 50 feet behind her, and make sure that it's closer to her than it is to him. And by doing that, I'm then going to be able to say, oh, my wife is divorced, and she doesn't even know. So that's terrible, right? You don't seem so bothered. It's terrible?
No, it is.
Does it make sense?
Yeah.
So the Gemara says this is terrible. And as a result of that, the Gemara says, we said that if somebody dares to do such a thing, instead of giving his wife a get like a mensch or putting it within dalat amas of his wife so that she knows and she understands, if he dares to throw a get and it's closer to him than to her, closer to her than to him, that's not good enough. And we're going to say in such a case, that's not kedas Moshe v'Yisro. If you turn out to be such a horrible husband that that's what you're willing to do to your wife when it's time to get out of the marriage, then you know what? We're going to go back to your original kedushin and we're going to say you were never married in the first place. Oh, so here's the idea we had last week. We don't accept the get marsham, but here's an idea that's actually bona fide by the Gemara. The Gemara gives the suggestion. Now, the Gemara doesn't suggest that we use it, but the Gemara happens to say, what happens in this kind of scenario? Oh, so here's the answer. Here's what we're going to do. You know, we're going to save all the mamzerim. We're going to tell the husband, now that your wife had an extramarital affair and she gave birth to a mamzer, what should we do? Do us a favor. Do us a favor and write your wife a get now, if you're willing to cooperate. Do us a favor and write your wife a get now. And don't give it to her in her hands, because then she's going to be divorced now. But that doesn't really help, because she already had the baby before. So here's what you're going to do. You're going to throw the get closer to her than it is to you, but without getting it into dalat amas of her property. And this way, the Gemara says, if you have such an awful husband who's willing to do that, we're going to say, l'mafreya, the original kiddushin doesn't work. And that's the way to save your wife. It means you were never married to her. So that's what we were talking about last week. How do you do it? So that's what Rav Asher Weiss was saying. You have to go out into the street. It can't be in a private home, because then if it's in a private home, either it belongs to me or it belongs to her. If it's my house, it belongs to me. If it's her house, it belongs to her. So you have to go into a Rishus HaRabim. Imagine you're walking in the park in Central Park one day and you see a Beis Din there with a couple, and they're trying to figure out, you know, it's a very strange scenario. So he said you have to go outside. You have to get a get to be written. Then once the get is written, you have to make sure that you throw it to her. But it has to be closer to her than it is to him. But it can't be within dalat amas of her. Now, how are you going to do that? A piece of paper is not so heavy. So imagine if I take one piece of paper, a get is just one piece of paper. I'm going to try to throw it to my wife. But how am I going to make sure that it's closer to her than it is to me? And how am I going to make sure that it doesn't get within dalat amas? So he was telling us you have to tie a stone around it so that it's heavy enough that I can throw it, but that I have to put piece of wood on the floor within dalat amas of her to make sure it doesn't go further than that. It's complicated. It's not so easy. And you have to have a husband who's willing to go along with this shenanigan, with this plan, right? Sounds interesting. It's more complicated than you thought. So here is the idea that he had. Now, not every husband is going to be willing to do that. In our case that we're dealing with here, the husband was divorced 25 years ago. He now lives in a different state. He has nothing to do with this woman. we're going to be able to call him out of the woodworks, that he should come back and do this wild stint in order to be able to allow his wife not to have a mamzer as a child? You got to be a very gracious husband to be willing to do that 25 years after you got divorced. Correct? So this is why it's not always so practical to do such a thing. But that would be a very legitimate halachic way to get rid of the situation of mamzerus. And that is why we tried to throw that in as one of the considerations to allow this couple to get married. Fascinating? Okay. Now, let's say neither of those are a possibility. Let's say you have a situation. You had a question? What? No? Good? Interesting? Okay. Are we happy we made the decision to talk about this, or everybody would rather talk about happier things? What? Happy we made this decision. Okay. What a way to end the semester. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So this is the question. If you have a get refuser today, why don't we say he's also not Kedas Moshe Yisrael, right? Because he signed up to be a good husband and to be a good guy, and it turns out you're not such a good guy. That's the major, major question of our generation. The Gemara gives a few scenarios where we would say that we automatically invalidate your Kiddushin Lemafreya because of the way you're acting. How much do we have wiggle room to say that we expand it to other cases as well? That's the major controversy of our generation. Because if that's the case, you could really get around a lot of the Aguna questions. But that's the point of debate. And that's why I thought this was valuable to understand also, because this is really where it comes from. So let's say we can't do a get Maharsham, because as we said, that's not so clear halachically that it works. And let's say we also don't have the ability to do this Karov La, but out of Dalet Amos, but in a Rosh HaRabim, whatever. It's just not realistic to get all the parties together and be able to do this. No one's willing to talk to each other. So now what can we do? Are there any other options? So that's a good question. The next thing that we try to do, again, all that we're trying to get at here is how can we figure out how to invalidate the marriage from day one? If we do that, then there's a way to say this child that was born is not a mamzer because the woman was never married and therefore it's not an extramarital affair. Okay, so here's the next option we have. We have a concept in halacha by Hilchos Mechira. When I'm doing business with someone, it's called mekachtos. Mekachtos means, I thought I was buying an item, and I thought the quality of the item was X, and I paid money for the item assuming it was X, and then it turns out that the item was Y. So what's the example the Mishnah gives in Baba Basra? Says the Mishnah, Hamocher Yayin L'Chaveiro. Gives a very simple case. I own a wine store. I sell somebody a bottle of wine, V'Hichmitz, and it turns into vinegar. What's the halacha? Is the person allowed to come back and return the bottle of wine? What would you say? Yes? Yeah. What do you say? So the Mishnah says no. They can't return the bottle of wine. Why? Because that happens. Wine turns into vinegar. You left the bottle of wine around your house for too long. It turned into vinegar. It's not my problem. It's your problem. However, says the Mishnah, Im yadua sheyeno machmitz. If I know that this wine has been on the shelf for the last 5 years, and I know that it's about to turn into vinegar, and it's not going to last, and I sell it to somebody, and they're assuming that it has a plenty of time to be on the shelf in their house. And really, I know, as the seller, as the provider, I'm very well aware of the fact that there is no way this is going to last. In such a case, says the Gemara, if it turns into chometz right away, if it turns into vinegar, hareze mekachtos. That's a sale that was very unfair. And I have every right to turn around and say, give me back my money, because you sold me something that you knew was turning into vinegar, and that was a very unfair mechira. That's what the halacha is. Now, the Rambam says, "Kol halokeach stam, eino lokeach ela davar hashaleh mikol mum." When I buy something, I assume that I'm buying a finished product. I assume that I'm buying something that is good quality. I don't assume that it's going to break the next day. If it breaks the next day, it means the quality of whatever I bought was not up to par. And therefore, the Rambam says, in such a case, I have a right to turn around and say, give me back the money. Okay. Says the Shulchan Aruch in Choshen Mishpat, this means, even if 10 years down the line, I realize that I was cheated, let's say I buy a suit and I don't wear it, and then I take it out 6 months later and I try it on and I see it's already falling apart without me even ever wearing it. Says the Shulchan Aruch, it doesn't matter how much later it is, you're allowed to go back to the store and bring it back because obviously what they sold you was not what you paid for, and you'd be allowed to go back. So long as, Kiven sheno dalo hamum yachzirenu. As long as right when I hear about the problem, I go back to the store. I don't wear it to 10 different weddings and then say, oh, you know, there's a problem with the suit. No. Obviously, you accepted it. The only time you have a right to say that this is a mekach toz, this is, I was cheated when I had this sale done with me, is if right away when I find out about the poor quality of the item, I turn around and I say, this is something that I do not want, and I give it back to them. But if I use it in the interim, that is something that would not be the same. Okay, now, what's the halacha when you translate that whole concept of mekach toz to marriage? Right? So say, for example, we just spoke about a misunderstanding in a sale. I thought I was buying wine, and the truth is I was buying vinegar, and I shouldn't have paid that kind of money for this item. So I have a right to go back and get the money back, yeah?
So then, like, if you didn't realize in the split of the spouses, like, issues, clearly, the relationship is not the same.
Correct. So let's see what happens. What happens when I have a mekach toz in a mechira, in a sale? I have a right to go back to the owner and say, give me back the money. What happens when I have a mekach toz in a marriage? Am I allowed to go back and say, look, I never intended to marry a person who has this problem, and therefore I go back on my original acceptance of kiddushin, and I don't want to be in a marriage with someone like this, and I don't even need a get from you. Is that acceptable? Does that work? So let's see. The Gemara Maseches Ksuvos Ayin Hey writes the following. Let's say a man is going out with a girl and he says, you know, I'm very interested in getting married. However, I want you to know, we only dated for a few weeks. I don't really know you. I've never actually seen you because you're always very dressed up. And I have an aversion to people who have birthmarks on their arms. Whatever. I have a problem with anybody who has, something on their body that I may not be aware of. So I'm telling you right now, I'm willing to get married, provided that you don't have a mum, provided that you don't have any deficiency. Okay, they go ahead and they get married. Then it turns out, he gets to know his wife, and oh my, does she have the birthmarks over there? Shh, terrible, forget it. I said I was only marrying you if you didn't have a mum. I can't believe you hid this from me. So what's the halacha? The halacha is, says the Gemara, that's called a mekach toz. That's called a mekach toz if he specifically said, I'm only marrying you on the condition that you don't have a mum. And then it turns out that she does have some kind of mum. So the halacha is, the marriage is invalidated. Now, what does that mean? That's very subjective. When I say I want someone who doesn't have a mum, it might mean one thing. When you say you want someone who doesn't have a mum, it might mean something else. Maybe you don't like this person's nose. Maybe you don't like that person's, whatever it is. There could be a million different things. A skin condition, who knows what. Doesn't have to be so severe. Everybody can have their own idea, says the Gemara. No, it doesn't work that way. You can't just say, oh, if you don't have any problem. The Gemara says there are very specific things. For example, says the Gemara, someone who has reach haguf. What does that mean? Someone who has a terrible odor. So a man says, I want to marry this woman as long as she doesn't have a mum. And then it turns out she has a terrible body odor. And every time he walks into the house, he feels uncomfortable with her. So that's something that's a real mum. That's a real problem. Or the Gemara says, Re'ach HaPet. This is before we had mouthwash. If somebody who just perpetually has terrible breath. You ever speak to people who have terrible breath? Right? So now there are ways to get around it. You take Listerine strips and you carry them around with you and you get rid of the problem. But there are people who have such a, I don't know if it's a condition or it's just the way they are. I guess that is a condition. Okay, whatever. But there's some people who have that. Says the Gemara, if I get married and I say, I'm only getting married on condition that you don't have a mum, and then it turns out that you have a terrible reach hapeh, you have terrible odor coming out of your mouth, that's something that's a legitimate consideration for a husband to come around later and say, look, this was a mekach toz, that's not fair. But he wakes up one day and he says, hey, there's a birthmark on your arm, it's too bad, well, that's ridiculous. You don't have a right to make such a demand, it's silly. So that has to be reasonable, yeah? So hold on a second. So let's do one thing at a time. Shulchan Aruch says there are very specific mumen, very specific deficiencies that a person has that would be included in this case. Not everything. A man can't just wake up and say, you know, I don't like this, I don't like that. It has to be very, very specific. Okay. But what happens in a case where the spouse does have a terrible body odor or the spouse does have a terrible mouth issue? In that kind of case, we say, limafreya, it's a mekach toz. That means we were never married in the first place. Oh, so here's the way around the problem. What are you going to do? You have a couple that got married, and then the woman unfortunately has an affair while she's married to this man. And now she has a child from that extramarital affair. And now the child is stuck because he's a mamzer. You know what we can do? Let's see if we can figure out a way that we can say that the marriage was invalidated in the first place by claiming it was a mekachtos. Now, what kind of claim could we have? So Rav Moshe Feinstein writes about the following case. Rav Moshe Feinstein writes about a case, very strange case, but these things happen. Rav Moshe says a woman got married, and it turns out, after they got married, she thought part of marriage is you have children, which I think is a safe assumption. Turns out, the husband realized that she wasn't on birth control, and he says, hey, I just signed up to get married to you. I don't want to have kids. And she says, are you crazy? Like, you got married. This is part of the understanding. Okay. He's very upset. He doesn't want to have children. Then she becomes pregnant. And he says, I demand that you get an abortion. I am not bringing a child into the world. So the woman turns around and says, look, I love you, but I didn't marry somebody who wasn't planning on having a family. And the husband says, I'm not going to give you a get. You know, if that's the way you're going to treat me, and you don't want to be married to me, I'm going to make you suffer. So Rav Moshe asks, is that grounds for a woman to say, that's a mekachtos? That's worse than somebody who has re'ach hapeh or re'ach haguf. That's terrible. I went into a marriage with the same understanding that most people have, which is, I'm going to be able to build a family with you. Now you're telling me, not only am I not allowed to build a family, but now that I'm pregnant, I have to get an abortion? Are you crazy? And the woman says, I want out. Of course she wants out of the marriage. Who wants to be married to such a guy? She wants out of the marriage. The husband won't give her a get. Rav Moshe writes, that's a mekachtos. That's so blatantly obvious that it's against the foundational understandings of what a marriage is, that a woman has a right to say, I'm out of here. And she doesn't need a get. And lemafreya, the whole thing was a mekachtos. Had I known this about the husband in the first place, I never would have married him. Of course I never would have married him. The same way, had I known that this bottle of wine was vinegar, I never would have bought it. Not that those two are the same. Obviously, one is very severe and one is nothing. But still, the Gemara, Rav Moshe says, we have a right to say, in such a situation, that that is a mekachtos. Now, how far do you take it? Do you say, let's say, it turns out, let's say a husband is infertile. He didn't know about it. He has some kind of condition. He's not able to have children. So would you say that a woman's allowed to turn around and say, oh, mekachtos, you know, I never would have married him. It's very sticky. There are plenty of couples who are married and unfortunately can't have children either because she has a medical issue or he has a medical issue or simply they're not compatible for whatever reason. They can't have children together. Whatever the reason might be, and they live happy and healthy lives together. It's very disappointing. It's very upsetting and painful that they can't have kids, and it's something that bothers them every day. But in the end of the day, they do love each other and they want to stay together. So you can't claim that every person who can't have children is automatically considered to be a mekachtos. So this is something that is very, very problematic. Say, for example, this is a case that has come up, and that is what happens if, after a couple gets married, it turns out that the husband is a homosexual. And he has no emotional, intimate attachment to his wife. You're looking at me like I'm crazy. This happens. Don't be scared. It doesn't happen often. It won't happen to you, hopefully. Mirz Hashem, it shouldn't happen. It happens in other places. But it does happen. So what happens? They got married. Part of the understanding of marriage is we're going to love each other in many different ways. I don't want to be married to a husband who has no feelings or interest in me because he's only thinking about other men. And he's only interested in other men in a relationship with them instead of a relationship with me. So does a woman have a right to stand up and say, hey, had I known this before we got married, I never would have married you. Not because I don't like you, but because part of the institution of marriage is that we're going to love each other and we're going to be intimate. And this is unacceptable. I feel very sorry for you, but I can't be married to you. Does she have a right to say that? And the answer is, that's the same as Rav Moshe's case. Rav Moshe's case was, the husband says he doesn't want to have children. That's outrageous. A husband turning around and saying that he's a homosexual and has no ability to be intimate with his wife is also very against the fabric of what a marriage understanding is all about. And therefore, a woman might have a right to say that this is considered a kiddushei tos, the whole thing is a mekachtos, the whole thing is a mistake, and the mafreya, we're going to undo the marriage from the outset. Now, that being the case, you asked a very important question. Do we say that the same way a husband can say, I'm only marrying the wife as long as she doesn't have X, Y, or Z, and that works, does that work in the opposite direction as well? Can the woman stand under the chuppah and say, I love you very much, but I'd like you to know, I'm only willing to marry you if X, Y, or Z, and if it turns out not, I want you to know now that this is going to be invalid, lima freya. We were never married, and I don't need a get from you. Can she claim the same thing? You should say, why not? This is a deal. This is an understanding that we have. You're giving your commitment to marriage. I'm giving my commitment to marriage. We both have an equal right to say whatever our demands are. So the Gemara says that is true. However, the Gemara says that we do have a interesting consideration here. The Gemara says a phrase in Yevamos Kuf Yud Ches, Tav lemesiv, it sounds like a tongue twister. Tav lemesiv tandum and lemesiv armelu. What does it mean? Anybody knows what it means? If you would give a woman a choice to either be alone for the rest of her life or to be married to a guy that has this problem, right? Let's say she knew there was no other guy in the world to marry. What would she choose? So the Gemara assumes that the psychology of a woman is such that if you were giving her these two choices, one of them is the horrible choice of being alone for the rest of her life. The other choice is, you have a guy who's not exactly what you always envision marrying, but he's not terrible. He's not going to, Khalila, abuse you. He's not going to, whatever, but he's not exactly what your dream husband would have been, but it's manageable. What would a woman prefer if you would give her those two options? Says the Gemara, based on their understanding of the psychology of a woman, she would say, I would rather settle with this guy and at least have companionship for the rest of my life and have a marriage than to be alone for the rest of my life. I don't want to be an almana. I don't want to be alone. And therefore, the Gemara says, maybe for a woman to stand under the chuppah and say, I'm only marrying you if X, Y, or Z, and if not, then it turns out the whole thing is batel mafreya, not so fast. Is a woman really prepared to say that? 5 months into a marriage, when she finds out about his problem, whatever it might be, is she really prepared to say, I'm out? Not so fast. That's what the Gemara says. However, the poskim really limit the margin of that svar, and they say, well, you got to be reasonable. It might be true when you have a marginal issue that comes up about a husband, a woman's willing to say, I can settle for this instead of being alone. But if you have such a blatantly obvious problem, you have a husband who says he can't be intimate with his wife, he doesn't want to have children, whatever it is, of course she's entitled to say, I never signed up to a marriage like this. This is against the fundamental understandings of what a marriage is. And therefore, in a situation like that, we would say that she has every right to break it, just like he has every right to break it, and to say that lemafreya, the whole thing ended, and we don't have to be concerned. Okay, now, that is the third option. So we had the get mahar sham. We had the Dalet Amos of a get trying to figure out how to invalidate the marriage. And now the third option is, maybe we can figure out how to invalidate a marriage by finding a reason why it turns out that the whole marriage was on false pretense. I never would have married you had I known X, Y, or Z problem. That's not so easy to say. You have a woman who's married for 10 years. What are you going to say? Obviously, you stuck it out with him. It turns out now he's not doing the right thing. He's not being nice. He's not exactly how he should be. Okay, but it's hard to say that from the outset this was really something that I had in mind that I never would have married you in the first place. So mekachtos is not so easy to say, and that is why there's a major objection to claiming mekachtos. In the case that we were dealing with last week, the couple actually met each other, and they were high school sweethearts, and they loved each other very much. And then a year after high school, they got married, and they were both very young and very immature. And 6 months into the marriage, they realized this just doesn't make sense. We were good friends in high school, but we can't be married to each other. Not that he didn't like her, she didn't like him. They happen to still be friends 25 years later. So there's no claim of mekachtos. You can't go back and say, oh, she found out that he was a child molester, and therefore she didn't want to be married to him. That's ridiculous. That's not what happened here. They were very friendly. They continue to be friendly 25 years later, and you can't claim mekachtos in that case, which brings us back to a problem. If you can claim mekachtos, that means the marriage was valid, which means that they were actually married, which means that now she had a child from another marriage. That child is a mamzer. And we're back to where we started. Okay. Any other options? So let's see. Any other options? Here, I just want to give you like a little... I see we're almost done with the class. I can talk for another 3 hours about this topic. It's amazing. I hope you're all as excited as I am. Okay, let's see. So in our case, there was hachlafas hatabas, which means they did a double ring ceremony at the original marriage. Why should that matter? Would that matter? Why?
Because when you're giving it, if you say if there was a double ring ceremony, then him giving her the ring and her giving it back, it's an exchange. It's not like...
So double ring ceremony, usually he doesn't give her and she gives... He gives her one and she gives him a different one. It's not that they use the same ring.
Yeah, it's different.
So you're right. So here, let's read together. When they have a double ring ceremony, there's room to argue that maybe that also is a consideration to throw into the mix here, to invalidate the original marriage. Why? Let's read together. Od roi livdo kad kama she'efshar. Again, we wouldn't rely on this on its own, but when you put three or four or five different considerations together into the mixture, maybe there's room to say that this child is not a mamzer. It's hard to do all of this. Again, you're starting to realize the complexity of how complicated and intricate these issues actually are. But Baruch Hashem, we have big gedolim who are willing to go through all of this and to figure out in each and every case whether or not this is relevant. So let's see. Od roi livdo kad kama she'efshar. We should look into it. Let's try to invalidate the original marriage. Sometimes you have couples that aren't religious. What happens? They go together to buy the ring, and he buys the ring and gives it to her. Then it comes to the wedding, and she says, okay, I'm going to give you back the ring so that you can give it back to me for the ceremony. And they don't understand why we need to do this religiously. They think it's all just a formality. Under the chuppah, this is what Orthodox Jews do. They give a ring from the husband to the wife. Okay. Almanashi kachenaba, v'kia gavna en kidushea kidushin kimin shenasan la mishala. If a woman has a ring and gives it to the husband to then give to her, that's not called a kinyan, because you really have no understanding of what you're doing. So there really is no exchange at all. So this is the big question, whether when you have a double ring ceremony, do the two parties really understand when the kiddushin happens? You might mistakenly think that by her giving him the ring, she's being mekadesh him. And he thinks when he's giving her the ring, he's doing nothing. If that's what happened, then it turns out that the original ceremony was meaningless. Turns out the original ceremony was meaningless and they've not married, right? So that would be another way to think about how to get around this problem, to find out, was there a double ring ceremony? And if so, maybe that would be enough grounds to say, again, not on its own, but another part to the puzzle to say that maybe this was something that would be a way to invalidate the original marriage. Another way to do it would be if there were no witnesses, if there were no edim. Now, that's very hard to have a scenario like that. At every wedding you've ever been to, they always call up two witnesses to be there under the chuppah and watch the fact that the chassan actually was mekadesh as ishto, that he married his wife. When are you ever at a wedding where there are no two witnesses? Well, sometimes you come to a wedding where there are no two witnesses when it's not an Orthodox wedding, right? If you have somebody who gets married by the conservative or reform, it's not necessarily the case that you're going to have two kosher witnesses who are under the chuppah. And that's another way to consider getting around this particular issue. Yeah, you had a question?
Oh, yeah. When we're saying the double ring ceremony, does that mean like he's saying Hareya Mikudesha and she's just giving him the ring, or are they both saying something? Like,
whatever it is, you know, they both say something, they both exchange. The question is, do they really know what's going on?
So, right, so I'm wondering, is it about the fact that he's saying those words, or is it just about the fact that he understands what he's saying?
He has to understand what he's saying, yeah. That's why Mesada Kedushin, before he's Mesada Kedushin, always turns to the Chasan Kal and explains what's about to happen. He has to say, by giving the ring, it's not just a formality, you're getting married. This is the Kedushin. Okay, so here's a great case of a Shaila about Mekachtos. Okay, let's see. Let's read it together. I think you're going to find it interesting. This was a Shaila that was raised by the Bezin of America. So it was a Shaila that came up here in America, and Rabbi Willig sent the question to Rav Asher Weiss to ask him what he thought. So here, let's see. Isha Zu. You see it? Nechvod HaRabbanim. Okay, go to the next line. Isha Zu. See it? Isha Zu, he doesn't want to give away any details, so he writes, her name is Aleph Beis. Obviously, it's not her name. Nisa Lemar Gimel Dalet. Aleph Beis gets married to Gimel Dalet. Wonderful, beautiful shidduch. Bishnas 1989. Hanisu and Kanir Haya Kedas Moshe Yisrael. They got married in a regular chuppah v'kiddushin. L'divrei ha'isha le'ish zeh hayu bayis nafshios. The woman claims that the husband had mental issues. Lo isavi le'ishto, he had no interest in being intimate with his wife. Me'olam lo etzliach leparnasa bekavod, and he couldn't find a job, so that means he has some kind of problem, which is going to be contested, but that's what she claimed. She claimed, number one, that since he couldn't figure out how to be emotionally invested in the relationship, that was problem number one. Problem number two is he was never able to land a job, and that means that there's something deficient about him. Yesh lahem yalda. Now they have a daughter. Vihi harasa pam nosefes vihi pila. La'achar ka'asera shnos nisuin. After 10 years, they separated without a get. V'kiras mar heivav. Now this woman meets another man. Instead of Mr. Gimel Dalet, she meets Mr. Heivav. Okay? V'echlitu l'ischatein. And they decided they were going to get married. This new couple was going to get married. Achabal harishon sirev lases get. And the first husband refused to give her a get. He says, you weren't willing to stay married to me, I'm going to make you suffer. And he doesn't give her a get. Rav echad kasav la heter nisuin. There was a rabbi who writes her a letter. Don't worry about it. Go and get remarried. It's not a problem. V'chidish, and he writes, shanisuim harishonim b'telim u'mevutalim. And he writes in his heter nisuin, which doesn't exist, there's no such concept. He writes her a letter, I hereby announce that you have the authority to go ahead and get remarried. And that's what she does. And he writes in his letter, the reason why is because this was a mekachtos. From the fact that he couldn't be too emotionally invested in the relationship, and the fact that he couldn't get a job, means that there's something wrong with him. And since there's something wrong with him, that's the same as the cases that the Gemara describes. There's something extremely wrong with him. And that's similar to what Rav Moshe writes, that somebody who's unable to raise a family because he decides he doesn't want to have children is a very good grounds to say, I want to be out of the marriage and I don't need a get. So maybe we should say the same thing here. That's what was suggested. So what do you do? Now, turns out, let's keep going. This is fascinating. Amnam lefnei nisuel amar heivav. So before she gets married to Mr. Heivav, hodia la harav hamatir shelo kasav es asher kasav ela kedei luchot zabayla lasis loget. This rabbi comes back to her and says, hey, you know that what I wrote to you was a joke. You know that this wasn't a real authority that I was giving you to go and get remarried. You don't have a get. I was just trying to scare your husband, your first husband. What I was trying to tell him is, we don't care about you. We're going to move on with life without you. So you can be stubborn and not give a get. We're going to move on. She's going to get remarried. And then, maybe when he realizes there's not so much stake in the get, he'll give it anyway. But really, I didn't mean to give this to you. Okay. Now, who after Shmimanala? Okay, fine. Limrozos nisalabala. So now, without a get, she goes ahead and gets remarried to his second husband. Alpi heter zeshabiyada. Even though the rabbi told her not to rely on this piece of paper that he gave her, which he shouldn't have given it to her in the first place, but okay. The rabbi gave her this piece of paper. Then he said, I didn't really mean it, it was a joke. And now she goes ahead and gets remarried without a get. Nisuin elu hayigurum biyoser. The second marriage was worse. I remember this case. The second marriage was even worse. Habal hisnai klapea begasus of alimas. The second husband was abusive to her. He was a terrible husband. Bilimros ha pastoria sire vagarsha. And he refused to give her a get. At some point she found out that he sexually abused her daughter from the first marriage. You understand? She had a daughter from the first marriage. Her husband never gave her a get. Now she got remarried to a second husband. Second husband, it turns out, was highly abusive and sexually abused their daughter from the first marriage. Now, obviously, the woman wants out, right? Who wants to be married to this guy? And the question then became, what do we do? What do we do? Why is it a question? Because now she's pregnant from the second husband after she found all this out. So, of course, she wants to get divorced from him. She doesn't want to stay married to him. But she's already pregnant. What are you going to do? So this is the problem. This is the problem. It's a problem. So here is where he goes through this whole shaila to break it down and see what are the potential issues that we can try to negate to figure out how to invalidate the marriage, as we've been talking all along, to figure out how to get around this problem and to allow this woman to move on with her life. Again, this is only one snippet of the tshuva that I gave you here. It's just one piece of it. But he really goes through in great detail the whole story. Let's say we have a case where there are no halachic grounds to say mekachtos. The husband and the wife were both mentally sound. Just didn't work out. Sometimes a marriage doesn't work out. Everyone was healthy and fine. Nothing too unexpected. It turns out it's not compatible. Happens. So there's no grounds to say mekachtos. Are there any other possibilities or ideas of how to invalidate or negate the original marriage? So what we were talking about in this case that we dealt with, and this is what we're going to close with, is the original marriage in our case was done by a conservative rabbi. What is the status of a conservative rabbi? Conservative or reform rabbi? What is the status? So, Rav Moshe has a very extreme number of tshuvas where he talks about this. By extreme, I don't mean wrong. He just takes a very firm position. And Rav Moshe writes that off the bat, when you have a conservative or reform rabbi, they are considered pasul la'edus. They're out of the equation. And if they're the ones who officiate a marriage, and they're the ones who serve as the edim under the chuppah that this marriage happened, we don't care. It's as if the marriage never happened. By mere fact, says Rav Moshe, that you took a job in such a community where they're serving machalas hasuras, where they're being machalas Shabbos, where they're doing all kinds of things that the conservative and reform do. If you took such a job, it means you are off the bat a mumer. It means you're out of bounds. And therefore, we wouldn't count you to be a kosher aid for anything. So, that is the opinion of Rav Moshe Feinstein. Which in many of the cases that we have that come up as shailas, that's what happens. You have Bali Tshuva, who got married by a conservative or reform rabbi. Turns out in the end, they didn't get a get because they weren't so careful about that in those communities. Then they got remarried and it turned whatever. So the answer is, you never got married in the first place. Why? Because your first marriage was officiated by a conservative or reform rabbi. And Rav Moshe says that that would not be considered a marriage at all because he's an automatic pasul eidus. He's out from the equation. We don't even consider him to be a part of the discussion at all. That would be one easy way around it. However, Rav Soloveitchik very firmly disagreed. Soloveitchik said you have to judge each reform or conservative rabbi on his own merit. You have to find out, was he a Shomer Torah Mitzvos or was he not? In the case we were dealing with here, they swear up and down that the conservative rabbi who did the marriage was a Shomer Torah Mitzvos and he was really frum, and because he needed a job or because he wanted to do Kiruv on the conservative or reform, whoever it was, he went to get a job there. And therefore, you can't say that he's automatically considered a Pasul La'edus. He was a Shomer Torah Mitzvos. That's what the family says. Now, Rav Asher Weiss's response to that was, do you really believe that? Do you really believe he was a Shomer Torah Mitzvos? How can that be? He took a job in a conservative or reform shul, and he was there for 50 years. It's not like he took a job for a couple of years. Let's do some Kiruv. It's not like he took a job, oh, I need a parnasa, I don't know what to do, so in the interim period, while I need to feed my family, let me do this. He stuck around the community for 50 years. This marriage happened 35 years into his job there. So would you say 35 years into a job in a conservative shul, the man is still a Shomer Shabbos? You would say the man is still Shomer Kashrus? He's so careful. He speaks on a microphone every Shabbos. He's so careful about Shmiras HaMitzvos. So the family told us, yes, he spoke on a microphone every Shabbos, but he was careful that he had some kind of contraption to make the microphone a grumma. I don't know, whatever. They came up with all kinds of stories. Rav Asher Weiss said, look, a family always wants to whitewash the history of their grandparents. You don't want to say that your grandparents were not people of stature in the community. So, of course, if you ask the children now and the grandchildren, they're going to say, yes, of course he was Shomer Torah Mitzvos. Unfortunately, he had to take the job. What are you going to do? There was nothing else for him to do. He had to take the position. So that's part of the question here. If we say that this person actually was not a Shomer Torah Mitzvos, then we're good. Then we're back to Rav Moshe. Rav Soloveitchik agreed also. Rav Soloveitchik agreed, if you can prove that this conservative rabbi was not a Shomer Torah Mitzvos, then Rav Moshe is correct. He just disagreed with Rav Moshe's assumption that off the bat, without even looking into it, Rav Moshe says, every conservative and reform rabbi is out, even if we don't do any research on them. So here in this case, it became a little complicated. Because should we trust the family when they're arguing with us in the wrong direction? They're arguing with us, no, our grandfather was very chashuv. Our grandfather was a Shomer Torah Mitzvos, and he was a very upstanding Jew, and he was Shomer Torah Mitzvos, and don't call into question, because they said every time he had a wedding, he always served as the aide under the chuppah, and he always made sure that the chazan of the shul, who was also frum, used to come along with him to every chuppah. This way they always had two aidim under the chuppah, and therefore it was always Kedas Moshe Yisrael. So Rav Asher Weiss said, so you have one person in the community who's willing to be an aide with you. You and the chazan. 365 days a year the chazan's available? So what happened? The one day that you had a wedding and the chazan had the flu and he was sick in bed, you think you pulled him out of bed to come to the chuppah? No, not a chance. What do you do? Whatever. So we won't use the chazan. We'll pull someone out of the hat. Someone out of the crowd will come and stand there, right? Over 50 years of a career being Masada Kedushin for a conservative shul, Rav Asher felt, you have a right to assume that probably, once in a while, the chazan wasn't there. We're not even sure if the chazan was a Shomer Torah Mitzvos himself. We're not even sure if the rabbi was a Shomer Torah Mitzvah. Should we believe when the rabbi's children and grandchildren all tell us that he was frum? Is that really true? Can that be? 50 years into a shteller, he's still frum? Hard to imagine. But even so, can you really imagine that every single time he was Masada Kedushin, there was always another kosher aid there with him? Is that true? Even if the chazan was frum. What about when the chazan went on vacation? Sometimes he wasn't around. So again, this is another consideration to look into, whether we have a right to assume. Now, if there are pictures from the original chasana, if there are videos from the original wedding, then you can see whether the chasana was there. And then it's a little bit more complicated. Yeah, your question?
First of all, I was seeing someone, and he said that like it's very hard to go ahead like, for it to say that there were no kosher Eden, because there are so many people that come to the weddings, and it's very low standard.
Right, correct. That's a very good question. So, aren't there other people who sit there in the room? And even if these two eidim under the chuppah are not kosher, shouldn't that be something that somebody else in the room can pick up on, right? Is that what you're asking?
Well, yeah, there are so many people there.
Yeah, so this is a question that the Chasam Sefer raises. And the answer to that is that all the people in the room do not see the actual kiddushin happen. Right? When was the last time you were at a wedding and you saw the chasam give the kala the ring? Never. Oh, you saw your sister and brother-in-law. That doesn't count. Why? Because you're a karov. You can't serve as an aide in that situation either. So the only people that see are the father and the mother and the parents.
The people that are sitting up close.
The people are sitting up close don't really see either. But you're going to say to me that, what do you mean? There was a ring. Before she walked down the aisle, she had no rings on her finger. Now all of a sudden she walks down from the aisle and she has an extra ring. How did it get there? Right? How else did it get there? We have to assume this is what happened. Okay, but assumptions when it comes to Eidos doesn't work. The Gemara tells us a very strange halacha, but this is what the Gemara says. Let's say you see two people run into a building. Okay? Two people run into a building. Both of them obviously are alive when they're running in, because otherwise they can't run. So two people are running into a building. 5 minutes later, you see one person running out with a bloody knife in his hand, screaming and yelling on the top of his lungs, you know how he just murdered someone. And you go into the building to see what happened, and you see the guy is dead on the floor with a stab wound in his chest, and you see, you put the pieces together, you know exactly what happened, right? But you didn't watch it happen. You saw only two people walking to the house. One person left and the other person's dead, and one of them is walking out with a knife in his hands, and it's clear what happened. Can you go to the Beis Din and say, okay, I'd like to testify that Reuven murdered Shimon. Why? How do you know? The Beis Din's going to say, how do you know? What do you mean? I was standing on the street, and I watched two people run into the house. I saw one of them had a knife. He was chasing the other one, and I saw that when I went into the house, he was bleeding out because this person stabbed him to death. And the other one ran out with the bloody knife. Basin says, not good enough. I mean, not good enough. I mean, what more do you want? I should stand in the room and make sure to see the Eidus? The answer is yes, that's what's required. Eidus means you have to actually see what happened. You have to actually see what happened. My father likes to tell the story. I am overtime. I'm sorry. Your last class in Stern, you should want to go overtime. Right, I'll close with this story. My father likes to say the story that every so often you have, unfortunately, a chupas nida. It happens sometimes. It doesn't work out the schedule or something. You know, bodies are interesting and things happen unexpectedly. Every so often you have a chupas nida. Now, what happens at a chupas nida? It's unfortunate because the husband and wife can't touch each other after the wedding, whatever. But part of the very uncomfortable part of it is when you're standing under the chuppah, the husband can't put a ring onto his wife's hand because he's not allowed to touch her. She's a nida. So what do? You're under the chuppah and the Masada Kedushin says, okay, you know, like give her the ring. And he's like, oh, I can't. So number one, you make sure to tell the Masada Kedushin beforehand. Now what does the Masada Kedushin do? So the Masada Kedushin will whisper to the two Eidim that this is a chuppas nida. No one else is going to know. And what they do is the chassan drops the ring into the kala's hand and then she puts it on her finger. Fine. I'm telling you, you've been to chuppas nidas before and you don't know it. It's not something that's noticeable. Only to the two Eidim that are there, nobody else sees what's going on. So my father said that he was once at a wedding and he was asked to be an Eid Kiddushin, and Rav Soloveitchik was the Masada Kiddushin. Rav Soloveitchik turned to the two Eidim and he said, I feel very bad. I just want to let you know that the girl's a nida, so, you know, just be, you know, be mindful that's what's going to happen. Okay. So my father said he felt so bad, you know, like looking at the kala as this was happening. He felt really bad for them. He felt embarrassed, whatever it was. So he said, Rav Soloveitchik said on the microphone, by mistake, would the chassan please place the ring in the palm of the kala? Like not realizing that he shouldn't have said that. So that's what he said. And my father said like he was so embarrassed for this couple that he turned his face. And Rav Soloveitchik took the mic and he said, would the Eidim please stop looking away? So you know, we do have situations, but in a case like that, right? Why is it that nobody else knows that it's a chuv asnida? Because nobody's watching. You don't see exactly what's happening. You know that the woman for sure got the ring from the husband. Who else gave it to her? Okay, it's the same case as we have by the other story of Ritzicha, which also is very clear. Circumstantially, it seems that this is the reality, but unfortunately, if you don't have real Re'iya, you can't really have Edus. Again, this is not a full and complete story. What I'm sharing with you is some of the considerations that are taken into account when we are faced and confronted with a very unfortunate situation like we were last week. L'tza'arenu harav, this comes up more often than one would think. But Baruch Hashem, we have great Tamine Chachamim, great poskim who are willing to take responsibility, and who, whenever there's a possible or potential way to find some kind of kula, some kind of heter that's legitimate, not an illegitimate heter, but a real heter, it's something that they're willing to take the achrayus for. More often than not, when there's a heter mamzeris, a posek is not going to take it on his own. He's going to have other people who are going to read it over, make sure they agree, make sure that they are willing to sign off on it as well, because who wants to take the responsibility on by themselves? And that's something that is a very, very moving piece of this as well, to see that, right? I sent an email on Friday just to see that the collaboration between great Gedolim and great Poskim to try to do whatever they can to be Matir Amamzer B'Yisrael, to move on with your life, is something that is a very, very moving and jarring process to watch and to be a part of. And Emir Tashem, we shouldn't have to ever need such things. We shouldn't have to ever hear about such things, but very, very important halachic discussion to have nonetheless.